It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad y'all are here. Good to see my partner, my friend, Captain Mike.
Yes, sir. Sean, how you doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. It's darn near July.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's almost rodeo.
Yeah, it is almost rodeo. I just got some weeks before the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. What, three more weeks?
I think so.
Weeks, something like that. Before that, and then the big rodeo, and we'll talk about that coming up. Will Snapper be a category in the rodeo? We've got some insight here. Joining us later in the show, Colonel Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Research. Don't ruin it, Mike.
Like that's I said guess. Yeah. I didn't say it was going to be.
But when you say it,
said guess.
This is how this thing works. You go, I got a piece of information I'm going to give you, but I'm not going to give it to you yet. So we'll get to that later on in the show. Also talk about the law and jubilees. Yeah, that's got a lot of attention here over the last week. We talked a bit about it last week.
Yeah, there are laws and regulations and
whether you
limits
like it or not. Yeah, whether you like it or not.
And licenses there.
Yeah,
yes.
So we'll get in that discussion as well. And as we mentioned, it's been a few weeks since we were talking about it on the show, but like we talked about how quickly summer is moving and moving towards the end of summer, and an event coming up that we've needed for the dang longest time. And it took Lee and Sterla Davis at G&D Farms to make it happen. It's the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo coming up. And speaking of that, you say Lee Davis's name and he gets off the forklift long enough to talk to us. Hey, man.
Good morning, Mr. Sean. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
Okay, first of all, if people hadn't heard this, because I know a lot of local folks signing up to be part of this, this is what so many of us have said, why don't we have a dang, we have a boat show in the spring, it's great and all that, but why don't we have something more for hunting and all that in the fall? And y'all have done that.
That's our goal. We're like you now. We're outdoor enthusiasts, and we've seen a need for this in our area, and we kept waiting on somebody to do it, and we decided, well, if we're going, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, that's what I like. Conversations I've had with Lee and Starlet, same thing so many of us, like we all waited around for somebody to do it. Like, I guess somebody else will do it. Somebody else will do it. It takes somebody like y'all stepping up to do it. So this expo, first of all, this is coming up in September, right?
Yes, sir.
And
13th, 14th, and 15th.
Okay, going to be at the grounds. Give me an idea. Give me an idea. Like people, I want people to go to the Facebook page as well for the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. You'll check out a lot there. Give me an idea of what we're going to see at this event.
All your seed vendors, your outdoor type products, the shooting houses, the fishing, outdoor apparel, that kind of stuff. Anything that's in our wheelhouse.
Safes.
As far as an outdoor enthusiast. And we're trying to promote the Gulf Coast area. We want local vendors, local made products. And when I say local made, I'm talking about the Southeast, our general area.
I mean, it's, you look at these studies come out from the state and economics, how much hunting and fishing means to Alabama's economy. But and those are numbers and the people crunching numbers. And that's valuable. But I think about the frontline people that realize how many of us are heading to the woods or living that kind of lifestyle. You look at Lee, you look at Starla at G&D. I mean, you got a pretty good sense on it, don't you?
We do. We've been pushing this line or this avenue for years, and it's grown exponentially. It's hard to believe, but the outdoor enthusiast believes it because he's got out there and he sees the value of getting out in the Gulf and out in the woods and sitting there listening to a turkey gobble, and he knows it's expensive, but it's a lot cheaper than a psychiatrist.
Well said. Just joining us, talking to Lee Davis from G&D Farms and the upcoming Outdoors Expo. I think about it this way too. So I'm kind of a split deal. I come getting ag stuff from Lee, farm stuff, but about 50% of it's hunting stuff as well. What have you seen? I mean, you and I are closer to the same age. I mean, is it the last decade, two decades, three? How have you seen this change to like so many more people you know, do this full time, right? I mean, not that we didn't hunt or grandfather didn't hunt, but that it's like you said, a lifestyle.
It's you know, it's always been there, but in the last decade, it is just really, I don't know if you'd call it blowing up or what you'd call it. Just, there's more people realizing the joy of it, the fun, the outdoors. They're enjoying it more. It seems like the more stressful things get, the more they want to get out and get outdoors.
That's for sure. And on this the event coming up, so people are gonna be able to come through there. You said you had talking about the hunting, you know, like shooting houses, all that kind of good stuff that people would need for the season. But you also said seed vendors, and I have Lee kind of knows a little bit about the seed and fertilizer world. That's hitting at a perfect time. Is that by design,
right,
Lee?
Right.
Come on now, what? So
yeah,
you know when we're all ready for seed.
By far the design, and you know, and Mike, y'all know. There's a light switch that goes on after Labor Day.
It does. Actually, about a week or so before Labor Day.
Yes, we're turkey hunting, we're fishing, snapper. But that Labor Day weekend, you instantly, you can sit there in the bed at night before you fall asleep, and the first thing that pops in your head is, I got a bush hog at the hunting camp.
That's exactly right. You got a disc fields, you got a bush hog,
yeah,
you got to trim
training.
All
I
your...
I got to go check the shooting houses. And that's the reason we wanted to, so many of these outdoor expos that's in the Southeast are, Lord, you got the biggest one coming up in July. You know, we're too busy hunting a shade tree to worry about that.
That's right. But are you going to have the land shark people there?
We want to. We're trying to get them there, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a really good vendor if you could get them there. I mean, I know a lot of people that time of year, that's when they want to trim their roads. And,
exactly.
You know, and that there may be 10 more vendors like that out there that you may have coming. But that
right.
would be one good one for sure.
Yeah. Your mulchers, you're cleaning. That's everything that, you know, that's the perfect time to start scouting and getting your trails trimmed and make sure your shooting house is up to snuff.
That's right.
Speaking of which, side note, because where I buy, so I've got, and I know he's got multiple manufacturers, but the ones I buy,
right.
the Sportsman's
right.
condos from Lee and Starla.
Yes.
So as you know, I've built more than my share of shooting houses over time, and I have less patience for it as I get older, and I have less patience for the idea that I'm gonna have to build that thing again before they put me under it and bury me. Going to these plastic, composite, whatever, these things, used to be a few of them out there, but there's so many selections. I like it because I put the dang thing up, and I don't have to mess with it. I put the dang office chairs in there.
The only thing that's going to happen to it is a storm blow a tree on it.
Right, let's not
you
talk like that.
You don't have to worry about it rotting and the normal stuff. But, yeah, the Sportsman Condos guys will be there. Titan blinds will be there. That's a more upscale type blind that we've had really good luck with. They're super nice. And they come with the stands, and you mm-hmm. just put them up and you're done.
Yeah.
And like I said, unless you got a tree that blows down on it, you're good to go next year and the year after, and it's something you can enjoy from now on.
And you don't have, let's say, a Roman legion's worth of wasp in that joker like I do in the wooden shooting houses when you go in.
It's sealed up better than what
yep.
we would normally build,
Yeah.
It makes a big difference. Speaking of vendors, too, I know y'all, you know, came on, talked about it earlier this year about getting vendors. Is there still time for vendors to get involved?
There is. We do still have some places available because the fairgrounds is a big place.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking to them every day and wanting to get more and more. We've got a good many now. We've got enough to have a really fine event, but there's always room for another local company, somebody to come in there and let's showcase their product.
Are you going to have other vendors besides hunting and seed vendors and that type of stuff? You going to have any marine or boats out there
yes,
or fishing
yes, yes. We've
stuff?
Got, well, AFCO, the biggest AFCO dealer in our area by far, is going to set up a huge thing with AFCO shorts and shirts and yeah, we're going to have a lot more stuff than just that.
Good, good. Because, I mean, there's some people that, you know, may not be so much into the hunting, but they'd come to see the fishing
right.
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you got so much room out there. That, I mean, I don't know why more people don't use the grounds to for exhibits like this, because you got so much more room to park and you got so much room to put your vendors in there. I think it's going to be a great place for this.
I think this is going to, and we're doing this for the long haul. This is, I know this is the first one, but we're already thinking about second, third, fourth year. What can we add to it? And yeah, we're in this for the long haul because we think this is got great potential for our area.
Well, outside the obviously the pinnacle of it, be doing a radio show from the event as it gets started on that Friday. Any other events associated with the event with the Outdoor Expo?
Not yet. We've talked to them. We've talked to the fairgrounds people, and what we're thinking about maybe next year is getting set up to do a concert in coordination with the Outdoor Expo.
Mike,
you know, we've got some.
I can't sing like I used to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. I'm talking about professional. No karaoke.
It's be good.
We'll
good
get
stuff.
Jack Tillman out there. He karaoke's all the time.
He'll keep you entertained, I promise you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Lee, once again, people need to put, they take a second here and put this in their phones. That's what we all do in the calendars. The dates again?
Absolutely.
The dates are when?
September 13th, 14th, and 15th.
All right.
Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday afternoon.
Good stuff. We'll see you out there. And FM Talk 106.5 going to be out there at the event as well, along with the outdoor show. So we're looking forward to it. And save me a sportsman condo or two to add to the fleet.
I got you lined up. Got good. A trailer load coming.
Good stuff. That's
thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mike. You too, Sean. Appreciate it.
All right. There he goes. Lee Davis from G&D Farms and the Outdoor Expo coming up in September. The 13th, 14th, and 15th at the grounds. All right, coming back, Colonel Scott Bannon, Alabama Marine Resources, joins us. Right, welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, okay.
You know, that event, once again, coming up in September. If you want to go on Facebook, go to G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. Like we often tell you, you know, you go to FM Talk 106.5 on Facebook. Well, you need to go to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook to interact on things on this show. Same thing for G&D. They have a great Facebook page, but you need to G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. And yeah. I think there's plenty of links on their regular Facebook page, but it'll take you there, show you different vendors, times, all that kind of information. And like Lee said, if still some vendors have room for some vendors to get in. Physically, there's room for vendors to get in because it's at the grounds.
That's
it's
right.
Huge place. But in addition, there's still some time. But it's, you know, I mean, September, I mean, no, it sounds cliche. We'll be here before we know it.
I know Lee's been so excited about it. I mean, 6 months ago, he was telling me about it, and he was so fired up about it. It's going to be a good show. They're going to make it into a big show, a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that time. And, you know, we have boat shows, all these great things in the spring. Nice to have something here in the fall heading into it. All right. We'll do this. We'll ask a question about, I don't know how I'm going to open this up, but we're joined here by Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Could we go straight into a talk about snook? I mean, is that what you want to do?
We can talk about snook. As you are aware, we recently established, well, last year we established a state record for a snook, and this year the record was broken with a bigger fish. So we've seen snook show up here in Alabama for a couple of years. Now we're starting to see adults and bigger snook. So those are good things. I will say that there's been some discussion about do they need protection from the state of Alabama? Do we need to implement some kind of regulation? And we need to determine that they're resident populations. And so since we are seeing more and the adults, it's more likely there's a resident population. But part of me can say, well, there is no regulation. You can keep whatever size you want and as many as you want, but we also understand that some of our anglers are very responsible and would like to see us make sure that we protect that species for the future. So I will say that in-house, we're having some discussions on how that should be handled, because we are seeing more being landed, in especially in Baldwin County.
Yeah, it's okay. So it's one of these discussions that, like, there's no regulation for the for giant trevally in Alabama, you know, because it's a fish that hasn't is not here. When in those discussions, I don't know if you can give me the insight. When do you make a decision? Say, okay, this is an Alabama fish now, and because right now, like you said, it's not a fish that we've
when
dealt
you catch
with.
One, John.
Yeah, but no. What I'm saying is, like, when do you have a population big enough that you go, okay, this shows up when we look at the regulations, right, for limits or whatever? How many of those fish got to be in a system before they become part of the plan?
That's a good question, because this will be the first species in the careers of any of us that work here where that has occurred, where we've seen those populations move, other than like lionfish offshore as an invasive species. We don't look at snook as necessarily being an invasive species. It's territory. It's just expanded a little bit out of Florida. And there's only going to be a limited population in Alabama based on the history and the biology of that fish. They like clearer water. They like certain temperatures, you know, so there's so we probably won't see them to be as wide ranging as other species. But potentially what we might do is work with Florida, who has it's a pretty restrictive fishery in Florida. So maybe we match some of their rules to help preserve that population that is really probably a Pensacola population of fish, if that makes sense.
Are they getting, I mean, Pensacola, yeah, I've paid attention to the snook here in Alabama, but have they been catching, I mean, obviously they're coming that way. Have they been catching more over there?
I think they have. They have some regulations that apply, and they're very regional in Florida, the way the snook regulations and some other species. I think they're trout regulations because, you know, they're extremely diverse from one
sure.
end of the state to the other. So, but that would probably be our step one, is how do we do something that's relatively simple and that works for anglers, you know, to allow them to catch some fish, but also to meet that, that preservation obligation, you know, to make sure that we're not doing any damage to a species. And again, there is a line of thinking you can say, well, they're not a resident population, so who cares? But I think at some point they will become that.
Just, I think it'd be cool. They're a fun fish to catch. They're a fun fish to catch. I'd love to have them here.
I think in Florida there's sure. a slot limit. I mean, it's a slot size.
It is.
But it's different in different
they
parts.
They have a slot.
Yeah. So, and the fish
and there's
that
closed
was
season
caught,
too.
Yeah, the fish that was caught in Alabama, it wouldn't have made even a slot, would it?
Barely. Yes, that's correct. I think it was just like a fraction under meeting the slot for Florida. So it was an adult fish, and that's one of our rules, is it does have to be an adult fish, and so last year was the first time we actually had an adult fish landed, and so we didn't have any history for that, so we decided to, the committee, which Sean is a member of our state record fish committee, elected to go ahead and make that a state record fish, and I think it was a good move. It's the right move to establish that. And, again, so this year the fish, I think last year was about 5 pounds. I think this year's was 7. So.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, and I'd love to see them as part of the mix. All right, so from the rare and mysterious fish like snook to the, you know, homeboy and the home fish, snapper. How are we looking right now, Director, on our quota? Kind of give us the quota as was set, and how far along the projection is. How much of it have we used?
So we have a 659,664 pounds is our quota for this year. We had to pay back about 4,000 pounds from last year, which is, you know, it's statistically an anomaly, just going over a little bit. So we are currently at 164,854 pounds through last Monday. So the weather has not been helpful.
Got that right.
So the number of anglers going is lower, and the size fish is lower mm-hmm. because, you know, people are going out, it's rough, they're just grabbing a couple of quick fish and coming back. And you know me, I'm encouraging people, just keep your first couple of legal fish and call it a day, and you're going to start seeing those sizes increase. But we have weighed a 30-pounder. That was pretty exciting to see.
Yeah.
And I did have some folks tell me about their trip where they caught multiple fish over 20 pounds. And where they actually weighed them.
Okay.
Everybody
the director knows me well enough because I bet my next thing is like, yeah, well, where was their scale? Because I always hear from those people, yeah man, we catch a 30-pounder every time. I said, do you? Do you really?
Yeah.
And put that on the digital scale for me.
In my years as an enforcement officer, writing a ticket doesn't hurt people's feelings as bad as telling them that that's not a 20-pound fish.
That's right. That's right. That's for sure. So 164,000, a little over 164,000 pounds. So tracking this, a couple of questions. Number one, it is weather dependent. Number two, though, you see the most. When do y'all see long term? You know, looking back, the most effort by anglers. Like, is it a certain part of the season where you see more?
Absolutely. It's opening weekend. It's Memorial Day weekend when everybody's had cabin fever. They're ready to get out. Openings seem to generate that excitement. And so I always tell everyone you can kind of predict the season by that opening weekend. If it's if you get a big weekend, the season's going to kind of go away a little quicker because you do pretty high landings. But this year, you can go to OutdoorAlabama.com and look at the snapper summary. It was a negligible opening. It was negligible the next weekend. I mean, I think Mike mentioned earlier before we got on the air that that the weekends have just been tough. And here lately, the weekdays, welcome to hurricane season.
Mm-hmm.
Boats just can't get out. So so the grass will begin a slow, steady arc. And so you're going to fish through the summer.
Okay. Through the summer awesome. Means Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo?
Yes, I feel pretty good that that Snapper will be open for the rodeo. I talked with the event staff this week and provided the graph to them. I think when you look at the history of the fishery and how it goes, I think they're going to be fine. But I put in the caveat, the one thing that I've learned, well, there's a lot of things I am not good at. Predicting human behavior, I am an utter failure. So
I think we all are.
It's just so hard to determine that, but based on the history, if you look at the graphs, we're probably fine.
Okay. Yeah. So good news there.
Unless we have slick weekends all the way from here to the rodeo, that'd be the only way that it'd even be a chance for rodeo.
We're not tracking that way right now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And
when you get to July,
yeah,
I think Red Snapper have a July calendar. Like, they know when July hits to stop biting.
No, they go get in bunkers, Scott. They go get in bunkers. I think they underneath the pyramids and the chicken coops, they have bunkers, and they go get in there and they don't come out for July.
So I don't know what they do. But, and again, there is some biology behind it about the water temperatures, the oxygen levels, the spawning. So usually it slows down a little bit in July. So this will be an exceptional year because of we've already had some exceptional weather and heat and who knows. So.
Yeah, it's and we're watching this. So right now, for everybody, kind of wonder where we are. We haven't eaten through this too fast, and here in the short order from now till, you know, a few days from now, looks like it's going to be the same. One thing you talk about July, and we'll go to the break here in a second. But what's the situation with Independence Day being on a Thursday this year? I think it's a Thursday. What's the schedule for snapper fishing? Are we changing the schedule there? I know a lot of times around Independence Day we do.
Yes, so you'll get the whole week. We opted to keep the whole week of Independence Day. So if you're on vacation, pick the day that works best for you and go fish.
Now we're talking.
Sounds good.
Coming right back with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward. Our guest, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Talk snapper, if you didn't catch it. Scott says, we're good through rodeo, right? I'm putting that in stone. We're good through rodeo. He loves this when I do this.
I'm going to retire July 1st.
It's your problem, Sullivan. All right, so, but we're good there. Now I got to ask you, one of the... stories from the Marine world that broke out of this outdoors world and became a talker on this radio station during the week. And it was, you know, last week, I guess it midweek, Tuesday or Wednesday. I know I was still in bed when my phone started pinging with people sending me pictures of the Jubilee. And I've only seen one in my life. I'm a Mobile County guy. But everybody always tells me once it's too late to get there, hey, there's a Jubilee happening. And I thought, okay, cool, first Jubilees. From there on, there's been a bunch of news about, well, we talked about it last week on the show. We just reminded everybody what was put on your Facebook page, that the regulations as if we were fishing with a hook and line still apply, correct?
That is correct. There is no Jubilee exemption.
Okay. So, I mean, whatever it is when y'all are in the boat, you know, if it's flounder, five of them at 14 inches, it's five of them at 14 inches if you're gigging or picking them up.
That's correct. And I know that there has been some historic free-for-all type mentality that occurred with Jubilees. You know, we live in one of two places in the world that have Jubilees. It's a very unique event that occurs here. I encourage people to go down and see them, participate in them, catch the species that are allowed to be caught legally, keep within the limits, and go and enjoy it. But the those fish are not, it's generally fish, shrimp, and crabs are the predominant, and flounder is usually the predominant species of fish. Those are not dead critters. They are usually in a very lethargic state. I think you talked with John Bendo before mm-hmm. for a substantial amount of time. It's a low oxygen event. There's some other things. When that tide changes, and most of those will wash back out. They will get back into the environment that they kind of quote come back to life, or they get rejuvenated, and they're gone. They're back out being the fish and shrimp and crabs that they are going to be. So I think people have this misconception that they're dead anyway, so we should just get them. And that's not true. And unfortunately, people like to harvest a lot of undersized flounder. And, you know, we've worked very hard to increase our flounder populations. I think the Jubilees are kind of showing that those populations are rebounding because
big time.
The pictures I saw, there were a lot of flounder. So don't come tell me you can't catch a flounder, and then you're going to go down there and harvest 100 undersized fish. You know, so
well, and that's once again, you said it, but I will have you say it again. Just that the idea is people say I can't, you know, it's undersized, but it's going to be dead. So it's not going to be dead.
It's not. Those fish are alive, and they will live. Very few of them die in the process. What happens with a few is as the tide goes out, they get stuck on the shoreline because they weren't moving very well. If that happens, then naturally that fish is going to die because they didn't keep up with the water. But most of them, we don't get reports of, you know, big fish kills after a Jubilee. You know, there's not people complaining about the smell of all the dead rotting marine life on the beach. It doesn't happen because they don't die.
Now, I want to ask you, too, you mentioned shrimp on this. And so license-wise, so I have a recreational shrimp license. Right? It lets me pull a net. What is the situation there if I'm harvesting shrimp? I mean, I know we have our restrictions for, like, you know, the gallon, but do I have to have a shrimping license, or can I just grab them?
So it's interesting. Shrimp is an interesting one. If you want to throw cast netting is generally the other method to catch shrimp. Mm-hmm. And you can cast net from a boat, and because of the way the shrimp law is written, it is a boat license. But you also need to be licensed to use that gear, which is a saltwater fishing license. So from a boat, you technically need a saltwater fishing license and a shrimp boat license because the license says to transport shrimp on the boat, you have to have a license. So, again, relatively inexpensive recreational shrimp boat license and then your saltwater license. So then if you're harvesting shrimp from the shoreline, right, throwing that cast net, you just need a saltwater fishing license.
But what if somebody has, like, just a long-handled dip net? You know what I'm saying? They're grabbing them like that.
Same thing. It would be you need to have that saltwater fishing license, and it's and you're allowed 5 gallons, I believe.
Yeah, five. So you don't have
40 quart.
But if you're on the bank, you got your dip net, you're getting them. You have to have your saltwater license. Do you have to have the shrimp?
Correct.
You have a shrimp license or not?
You don't have to have the
because you're not on a boat.
That is a shrimp
right.
boat.
Not on a boat.
Which, by the way, just side note. I know the Colonel doesn't want to hear, but this is. So I've asked this over time. This is just my plea to the system as a person that has two different boats. He would be pulling that 8-foot net I got with, you know, is the ability
to
have it
from boat to boat.
Yeah, I would love it to be able to travel with me.
But as an agency who is solely dependent on the license sales, I want you to license everybody.
I know you do. I know you do. Because that's where all the – that's what funds are. Yeah. And, you know, and I want to take a second, too. If people go – some of the rants here, and we're going to talk about the politics around this, but – you know, people say, well, I should have a God-given right to do this, that, and the other and get whatever fish I want. Y'all, the boat ramps don't magically appear. The management doesn't magically appear. The restocking efforts don't magically appear. But that, I don't know if you want to chime in on that. But
the boats aren't free that they use
right.
to regulate us.
Sure.
Yeah, either.
Sure.
Or the vehicles.
We only utilize, we use a very small amount of some marine fuel tax and tackle tax. And we talk about the sport fish dollars. We mm-hmm. utilize those. That's some matching federal funds. But other than that, our funding is through license sales. And remember, the purpose of our agency is not to take away opportunities. The purpose of our agency of Marine Resources is to ensure that you have opportunities. That is, you could take 10 people out and 6 of them will make reasonable decisions and say, you know, I only need this many fish. With no rules in place, they'll say, you know what, this is plenty for me. But those other 4 will load the boat until they can barely make it back. And so that's where the rules, unfortunately, are designed for us, because there are a lot of folks who would not be act reasonable, so we have to develop things that are reasonable. I want people to fish. I want there to be reasonable limits. And I have to think generationally. You know, I want opportunities for your grandkids and great-grandkids. So the rules are kind of guiding that we continue to have opportunities. And if you look at saltwater license sales, combined different license sales, we're about 100,000 different licenses a year, including resident, non-resident, trip licenses, pier license. That's a lot of hooks, you know, so that's a lot of effort. Look at boat sales. The efficiency of fishing now is incredible, you know, so that's why we are here. We are not here to tell you no. We're here to ensure that we can continue to tell you yes. That is the sole purpose. That is Scott Bannon's view of fisheries management, is I want you to have these opportunities.
Well, so the people that went to the Jubilee over there, the game wardens, I'm sure, were checking to see if they had licenses mm-hmm. and they had the limits right and all that. Did they write a lot of tickets? Do you know?
So they only wrote a couple of tickets over those 2 days. The majority of people, my staff said there were about 70 people when they went, and the majority of people were within limits, you know, so... We wrote, I think there was about 5 tickets written now, and there was 36 fish confiscated, and 30 of them belonged to one person. So that shows you, with that. So again, that's that one very irresponsible person.
Yes.
And the one that made the news. And remember, most people that have encountered our officers, I want our officers to be the nicest people in the world, that if you have to get a ticket from them, that they still had a reasonable, respectful conversation. But oftentimes the customer drives the process there. And in this particular case, even from our perspective, it grew into a custodial arrest. A person went to jail over what should have been a ticket, but they drove that. When they refused to comply with the officer, when they decided to fight with the officer, when they decided to run away from the officer, then that's what happens. You know, there's consequences for your actions. And thankfully for us, that's a very, very rare occasion. Usually we have very good discussions with folks. We spend a lot of time educating the public and writing tickets as part of that education sometimes. And so the defendant in this case could have handled himself in a much more respectable manner and walked out of there with a ticket and instead of a ride to downtown Baymanette.
You know, I don't understand why people run from the police, whether it's the game wardens or the police or the state trooper or whatever. I mean, 99.9% chance they're going to get caught, and when they do, everything's going to be way worse for them.
It gets worse.
Just say, okay, yes, sir, I did wrong, give them my ticket, and go on down the road and be done with it.
And go to court.
Yeah.
You know, we have a court system, and I will tell you from the top down, I 100% support people's right to go to court and have your day in front of the judge, you know, so if you ever feel that there's a concern with the charge, please take it to court and have that discussion in front of a judge. I fully support this. This is the United States, and that's how we do business. So, but we're a nation of laws, and again, you can tell by the numbers, and this was an egregious case, and the person just acted very irresponsibly, and it's unfortunate because again, we don't go out there looking for, you know, let's go take everybody to jail. That is not the goal of our enforcement guys.
No, but I'm sure that this isn't the first time that you've had a show of force with the game wardens over there, and people are learning that if they go and get on Jubilee, they better be in compliance. They better have the right limits, better have the license. You know, I bet the first time you went over there, you wrote more licenses. But we're getting ready to go to a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk about that.
All right, coming back, Wolf FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our guest director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, talked about the, I kept trying to think of some kind of headline, the Jubilee fracas or something going on, but, you know.
Jubilee runner.
Yeah, but I mean, we talked during the break, director, that it's, there's a benefit to this too, making as much news as it did.
Sure. So, I've used this expression before. It's a terrible expression, the Miley Cyrus effect. Publicity is publicity. So unfortunately, this particular event was a negative event for a particular individual, but it has created a lot of discussion, and so now there's been this media traction, and so more and more folks are aware that the rules do apply. So the positive of this is that many more people are going to know, hey, during these Jubilees, these are amazing events. It's a phenomenon that only occurs in two places in the world. Let's go participate. Let's go catch some fish and shrimp and crab. But there are some rules that apply. We'll abide by them, and everybody will be good.
Well, it's just an everyday rule. You know, you got a limit, a size.
Right, but I mean, just tuning people back into that conversation. Like, we have it. We all live in this world, right? But, I mean, some of those people don't think about it maybe as much.
You know, that people that just hear about a Jubilee and say, I'm going to get me some, and they don't normally fish. They go grab a net or something and run down to the beach and never even think about, I should have a license, and how big is that flounder? He's 10 inches, you know, long. I'm going to get him. It don't matter. Well, there's size limits, and there's methods to catch all this stuff. So, you know, if they don't do right, they're going to get a ticket.
Yes, and ultimately we want people to do right. And again, the majority of people that our officers encountered were legal and were just enjoying the event. And that's great. And that's the majority of people that we encounter every single day are law-abiding. They're out having a good time, enjoying the amazing resources we have here in Alabama. And it's just our job to protect those resources. So that's the method.
Okay. I want to ask something on the enforcement side, too. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was during the Midday Mobile show, but I was saying something, and somebody had texted me and said, hey, are they still using the dogs to check for snapper on the boats? What was it, Morgan? Weren't they Gaines and Morgan?
Gaines and Morgan, named after the forts that protected the entrance to Mobile Bay. So both dogs have retired. One of the handlers, she left to take another job. She now works for a federal agency. We did not have an additional officer that wanted to take on the responsibilities of handling a dog. It is time, you know, it's out of an officer's day. The dog lives with them. It's a lot. We paid them extra to do that, but it is time consuming. So no one else wanted to do that. So we allowed her to retire the dog and go with her. And then the other one who was working had a hip injury that required some surgery. And we opted, he was 8 years old, I think, at the time. So we opted to go ahead and retire him out. So it's not to turn that into a permanent injury with the so he is living out, he's living his best life with the handler and his two boys. So they are very well taken care of, and you know, the investment that we made in there, I think, paid off with the education that was provided when so many people knew that we were looking for those things. And really, it helped curtail the fillet and release program. So other states have now taken up that type of program. I just talked to a state a couple of weeks ago, and I made the connection with them and Auburn's Canine Performance Science Center to do some dog training.
I mean, it's amazing. In the world of the highest tech, I mean, every day you turn around, there's more and more technology, and, you know, whether you talk AI or just mechanical technology. But those dogs still were an amazing.
They're special.
I mean, it's an amazing tool. Yep. You know, we've talked about it, a lot of different things outside of what y'all do. But, I mean, people get this idea. Well, you know, dogs will sniff out. They'll find a duck and find a quail. They'll run a deer. You can train them to sniff for dang anything. You get, I mean, whatever you make the scent, that dog's like, okay, well, that's what I look for. I mean, just they're Auburn, amazing.
They are.
Auburn has a great program in that Canine Performance Science Center up there. They do, you know, finding cancer, just doing amazing things.
Yeah.
But one of them said, he goes, we haven't asked all the right questions of the dogs yet. He said, so we just keep coming up with new questions to ask the dog.
We need to get them to sniff out stupid people.
No, because it'd be over. I mean, it would be too much input for the dog, and the dog would just
go.
Yeah.
The dogs are in retirement, so that's good. That answers that question for folks. On your radar screen here too. How did we got anything on our reporting from Trigger and Amberjack that shows us anything? Any data coming in yet?
So the data that we really like to look at is our evaluation of the Alabama Reef Zone from Sean Powers and the University of South Alabama. And it shows that things are in a little bit of an upward trend on those two species here off the coast of Alabama. So that's good. And anecdotally, you know, in their discussions with people, we're seeing increases in catches of trigger, especially to the east. And with our super pyramids, that the tall pole, the amberjack really liked those poles. So as we were deploying reefs, and we take that into account, is the amberjack. And University of South Alabama is leading the Gulf's wide amberjack study, which is going to be coming to a close here in the near future, and we'll see what the data looks like from that, because it's modeled after the Great Red Snapper count. So that methodology, which I think we've shown is a much better methodology than some of the things we've done in the past. So I think there's a lot of good things going on in that world. We do have some challenges, unfortunately, with some of the federal effort survey stuff. Even NOAA came out and said that they felt that their data was off by 30-40%, and so we're trying to work through those. That's a whole another episode, but yeah. But there's a lot of good things going on in the Alabama Reef Zone. So, again, it's a blessing that we have that here in Alabama. And we have the scientists at University of South Alabama and our chief science officer, Kevin Anson, who helps stay on top of that.
Good stuff. Director, we appreciate your time, and we will get you back on soon.
All right, guys. Go fish and avoid the wind.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, our guest, Scott Bannon. And we'll do it all again next week. Y'all have a good one.